It just sounded like most of the other jobs that I'd ever done. It was a new club in the Caribbean.
There's something not right here, Jane.
You're taking drugs back to England?
Putting drugs in, you know, in a shampoo bottle. It's ludicrous. It's mental. That's it. Life over, in prison, in the Caribbean, 20 years. Good luck with that.
Hey, BDs!
How can he still love me after what I've just got him into?
The guard says, Englishman, you'll be dead in 2 weeks.
From Wondery, this is Locked Up Abroad. I'm your host, Jim Clementi. Today we bring you Caribbean Nightmare. Jane Bladen is working as a stripper in West Yorkshire, England, when she's presented with a proposition to teach lap dancing at a new club in the Caribbean. She and her husband David arrive in Guyana for what starts out as a dream vacation, but soon they realize they've been tricked into smuggling multiple kilos of liquid cocaine back to England. They successfully get through two custom points before being arrested in Guadeloupe. And they end up spending 2 harrowing years in prison.
I was a pole dancer, what we used to call table dancers. A typical night's work is you go on stage, do a bit of a dance. It's just basically dancing and having fun and having a laugh with the guys that's in the audience. I love music, I love dancing, and the pay was excellent. One night, this girl, she just came and asked if I was interested in doing a job abroad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah. Whereabouts?
She mentioned it would be Guyana, South America.
Wow.
The money would be very good. I'm thinking, yeah, I could do with a bit of a holiday, to be honest. I didn't say yes straight away, but I said I probably would do it after I spoke to David.
Hey, darling.
All right, love.
When I got home that night, David was still up.
Been offered a job?
She said she'd been offered some work out in Guyana in South America. I said, what type of work? She said, well, lap dancing, pole dancing, just basically teaching their locals how to do the job. I said, not a chance. I said, there's no way I'm letting you go out to South America, not in a million years. We didn't argue about it. But I just said, no. I said, Jane, it's just not happening.
I was angry a little bit because I'd got it in my head that I was going off to the Caribbean. You can be stubborn. But I usually get my own way, so I thought I'd be able to talk him round. The next time I was working in the club, the girl introduced me to this tall, dark guy. I said, oh, I'm Mr. Biggs. Pleased to meet you.
Beautiful woman you are.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It was very polite, very charming. He said to me it was a new club in Guyana. They needed to teach some of the local girls, so I would be teaching them how to do the pole dancing and just doing a show a night myself.
Because all you do is teach the girls?
And relax during the day and then just work at night.
And you'll be doing a show a night yourself?
To me, there was nothing unusual. I did mention to him that David wasn't so happy about going on my own. I just asked if it would be possible for David to come with me.
I don't think it'll be a problem at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds brilliant.
He said, I'll come and meet him, we'll discuss it so David's comfortable with everything. I was thinking, that's it, we're off. In my head, I was already packing my bags.
About 2 or 3 days later, I had a knock at the door.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
My name is Steve. Everybody knows me as Biggs.
Came in, sat down.
So,
David. Mind if I call you Dave?
Not at all.
And straight away, I like the guy. And he says, I know you can probably worry about things and sending a girl out to South America. Oh, it sounds dodgy. But believe me, he said, that's why I said I will pay for you to go with her. Your hotels and everything will be paid for, all your expenses. I think I just pushed that niggling little doubt to the back of my head. I'm starting to think, well, you're worrying for no reason.
Come on, when was the last time we had a holiday?
So we decided there and then, right, let's just go for it, you know. Let's go out there and have a break.
OK.
Nice.
We'll do it.
Shook hands. So I'll be in touch with your tickets.
See
ya. I'll see you when you get back.
We're on.
After he'd gone, Jane was like smiling, laughing. She said, I knew we were going to go, whether you wanted to or not.
You happy now?
Yes, I'm happy now.
I got my own way in the end.
Yeah, biggest mistake of my life. Without a shadow of a doubt, you know. We got off the plane and it was around about, I would say, about 8 o'clock at night.
Walked to outside expecting someone waiting there, you know, like they do with the name cards and everything. Someone's supposed to meet us there, they're not here. We had loads of people coming up saying, do you want a taxi? And I'm like, no, no, we're all right, we're waiting for someone.
No, thank you. No, we're all right, thank you.
And I said to Jim, we've got to get out of here. I said, because I just don't feel safe.
Well, we've got the details of the hotel, we know where we're going, so shall we just grab a cab and go there?
That's what we did. The driver pulled up outside the hotel. It was a big hotel. Five-star, all well lit up, very clean. My mood lifted, you know, I felt a lot better.
Well, I thought, fantastic. This is what I came for.
So I went to reception, gave them his names.
David and Jane Bladen.
Couldn't find us.
I'm sorry, there's no reservation number that name.
I said, you need to check. I said, there's got to be a mistake. Checked again. We weren't booked in. And I could see Jane's face, you know.
Then I got a bit thinking, what the hell is going on?
You're in the middle of South America. You've got no hotel room. It's getting late at night. Nobody's met you. All my alarm bells that had all been kicked to the back of me and now started ringing again.
Well, you know what I said?
So I said, look, only thing we can do is book in, you know, pay for a room. And then tomorrow, try and get hold of these people.
Right, OK, thank you very much.
We'd been about 5 minutes. There was a bang on the door. I answered the door.
Hi, I'm Michael.
He looked a little bit rough and ready, you know, the guy, but polite, very polite man.
Look, I'm so sorry. I should have met you at the airport. All I can do is apologise.
Jane was a bit angry with the guy.
Oh, hello. Are you this person that was supposed to meet us at the airport?
Yes.
Saying, look, we've been stood there almost an hour. You know, we're in a strange country and you leave us there just stranded. He said, no, no, he said, I can understand you being angry.
It's totally my fault. I mixed up the flight times.
He was talking nice, being polite, apologising.
He said, well, I know you're at this hotel.
But this is not the hotel we want you to stay at.
What?
What do you mean?
He said, this is just... But when you come through customs, for your visa and that, they like to know that you're staying somewhere that's, you know, top of the range.
But don't worry, the other hotel that we're going to take you to is just as nice as this one.
OK.
OK.
He said, spend the night here, relax, have a good night's sleep.
Right, OK. Thanks, Mike.
He said, good night. And he went.
There you go.
Me and Jane were laughing. The mood lifted again. It's just been a mistake, you know, these things happen.
The next day, we'd got all our things together. He met us, it was nice again. And just took us to the car.
We came off the main road and drove down a couple of, like, I would say, basically the tracks. We would drove for about another 5 minutes and we pulled up at this hotel. You could see there was a fence all the way around, you know. But there was nobody there. No, nobody. We'd been up there about 2 minutes and we got a knock on the door.
Yeah, all right, man? All right.
And it was Michael.
Yeah,
that's right. Hiya.
And he was with a big African guy. And he got, for some reason, he got a bomber jacket on, you know, a zip-up jacket. It looked a bit spooky, the guy, you know. He's a guy you wouldn't like to cross.
Michael said, oh, this is John. He'll be taking care of you while you're here. Anything you need or you want, we have to see John.
So you need to go anywhere into town or anything, you know, John will come with you to make sure, you know, you're safe.
Like a bodyguard.
Michael said, they're having a trouble with a licence at the club. He said, so everything's on hold for a day, maybe 2 days. So just, you know, be cool, you know, just everything's still on track.
We're just waiting for the licence.
I'll see you out.
Yeah. Thinking, oh, here we go again, you know, another problem. But after it went, Jane said, mind you, that gives us a couple of days, you know, just to chill out.
Hey, come on, stop worrying.
Jane said, we can go in the daytime, go to the other hotel and sunbathe, you know, by their pool.
The pool was lovely. I thought, oh, forget the other hotel, don't matter, I'll just sleep there and come to this one every day.
Nice.
Absolutely fantastic. Relaxed.
Very good. Come on, let's...
I can do 2 weeks of this, you know. Brilliant.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to us.
I was laid there, just relaxing. And I could see John coming to the hotel, you know, to the hotel pool area. You know, I just thought maybe just coming to check, see if we're OK. But he looked serious. And he leant over to me and said, I need you to go back to the hotel. I said, there's nothing at that hotel. I said, we're here just taking some sun and a drink. And he just leant over again and said, I need you to go back to the hotel and I'm not going to ask you again. I said, I'm telling you.
Let's go back to the hotel. End of discussion.
And as he leant over, you could see under his jacket, he had a gun.
I need you to come back to the hotel now. All right?
I just saw David's face expression change.
All right, mate.
I said, Jane, look, just get your things. Let's just go. As we walked through the hotel, you know, it was silent. There was a car waiting. He just opened the door and said, just get in.
I thought, well, I'm in a strange country. There's a guy there in the front with a gun.
This is not right. Panicking, you know? Starting to panic.
If soy-glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans sounds good to you, but you can't imagine finding the time or the skills to cook it, believe me, I understand. That was me before I tried Blue Apron. Each Blue Apron meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-proportioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lockedup. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lockedup. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
When we got back to the hotel, Michael was waiting.
He said, I need you to go up to your room. And I'm coming to talk to you in a minute.
God, seriously, pissed off.
Jane's walking around the room, ranting and raving a little bit.
What the hell is going on? What's it doing? There's nothing to do here.
I said, Jane, just calm down. Let's see what they've got to say. And the door just opened and they walked in. Michael said, look, I don't know what you've been told in England, but you're here to do a job. I said, what do you mean?
What do you think you're here? Nobody flies all the way to South America for no reason, Dred.
I'm here to do a dancing job. He says, no matter what you've been told, there's no club, there's no dancing. He says, you know why you're here.
You're taking drugs back to England. Simple as that.
And as soon as them words come out of his mouth, take drugs back to England.
I think I just lost it.
You were having a flat. Hey! Wait, I am taking...
You're going to do exactly as you're told. All right?
John says, you're in this country. Nobody knows whereabouts you are in the country. And if we want you to disappear, you'll just disappear.
All of a sudden, they look huge. I think I was scared to death.
Michael said, look, we're taking your cases and your clothes.
And then we bring them back and we put in a key of cocaine in each bag.
1 kilo in each bag. Jane's just shaking her head, saying, I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it.
There is no way I am doing it.
Shut up, shut up!
John said, you are doing it, and that's the end of the matter. Tomorrow morning, you'll be taken to the airport, and things will start from there. They took his cases, they've got his passports, they've got any money we had. These guys said, don't try and leave your room. Don't try and leave the hotel. It says, because you'll pay. I said, at the end of the day, you'll pay with your life.
Now we're just stuck there in the room. Both of us were just absolutely terrified.
It's okay.
For the first time in my life, I just didn't have a clue what to do. And all I could think is, God, we've had it, you know? We're in trouble here. We're in big, big trouble.
Come here.
One point, I said, listen, I'm going to have a look and see, you know, downstairs, see if there's any way we can get out of here. There's nobody else in the hotel. There's no guests or anything like that, because I assume this is just what they use this hotel for. I walked to the top of the stairs, took about three steps down the stairs, and there's a John stood there right at the side of the door. There's no other exit from the hotel apart from down these stairs. You weren't getting out there, and it was as simple as that.
We didn't sleep much that night at all.
Can we tell somebody? You know, can we tell the police? But the trouble is, our phones didn't work. The hotel phones didn't work. We couldn't phone anybody. I really believe, 100%, no doubt about it, these guys would have shot us. Total and utter nightmare. I said to Jane, look, we're going to have to do what they say. Like it or not, we're going to do it. The next morning, John and Michael barge into the room, brandishing two brand new suitcases. John pulled a bottle out, and it was a shampoo bottle.
And that's when he explained that the drugs was inside these bottles.
The cocaine in this bottle.
I thought, good God, you know, this is going to be amateur hour, putting drugs in, you know, in a shampoo bottle. I thought, anybody just, like, opens that, they're going to suss straight away what's in it. And he said, eight bottles in each case. And he said, you're not flying direct, you're going from here to St. Lucia, into St. Martin's, into Guadeloupe, into France.
And when you get to France, you take a ferry straight to England.
It's ludicrous, you know, it's mental. He said, oh, there's a reason for it, because the route we take, we know it's safe. We've done this 1,000 times, he said, 1,000 times. Everybody's paid, the police are paid, the people at the airports are paid, the customs are paid, so you can't get caught. They told us when we got back to England, we would be met. And as soon as we handed the case over, we'd be handed an envelope with £8,000 in it. And for what you're risking, £8,000? It's nothing. You wouldn't do it for £1 million.
Go straight to the airport.
There's no way around it. In the situation we're in, we've got to do it.
I'm just like a zombie. I'm just doing what David's telling me to do.
Once you're out there in that car and you're heading towards the airport, then it becomes real. She was just terrified, and I could see it written all over her face, you know?
I felt like crying, but I didn't want to, like, show my emotions in front of these guys.
It's killing me inside, because I'm the guy, I should be able to look after her. I shouldn't let this happen at the end of the day. And I feel guilty because I can't protect her, you know? When we arrived at the airport, John opened the boot, took both cases out, and walked to the airport. And there's a woman checking the bags. Straight away, you think, well, that's it, you've had it. You know, they're searching all the bags. I said, listen, John, look, they're going through all the bags. But John said, you're not going to get searched. Take your cases, go into the checkout, and just go through and get on the plane. We walked to the queue, everybody else is being searched. Everybody getting the cases searched. I looked back and John was still stood at the door, just watching, making sure we went through. Make sure we're getting on the plane.
I'm shaking, I'm sweating. I'm sure that people could see the fear in my face.
And she just waved us over. Good God, we're going to get stopped. We're going to get caught. This is it. Never even bat an eyelid. She just waved us past. Both cases, sure. Never looked in a bags, anything. The pressure that were on top of me, it seemed to just vanish, you know?
Thank you.
And I can remember walking off with Jane saying, God, that were easy. Nobody gives us a second glance, you know? Nobody batted an eyelid. Maybe it's not going to be as bad as we thought. Maybe we won't get caught. As we get back into the airport, the word is started coming back again. We're waiting at the carousel. 5-10 minutes, the bags come round. And then it's that walk. You know you've got to go through customs, you know? You've got to go through customs. And all I kept thinking to myself is, I feel sick, you know? Just calm down, calm down. It's madness, you know, because your head's going 1,000 miles an hour thinking, If it gets stopped, what shall I say? What shall I say?
I'm still scared to death, thinking, do I look like I've got anything with me? I'm trying to act as calm and normal as possible.
I looked at the guy, he smiled, and I thought he was just going to say, come through.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got any counter, please?
No problem.
But he just said, can you put your bag on the counter? And at that point, I could have physically been sick there and then.
You have locked the key?
Yeah.
You unlock it, please?
He asks, have you got the keys to unlock the lock? I'm trying to take the key out without shaking. He never said anything. He just looked at me, looked at the bag, rummaged through the bag, and it's like he knew what he was going for. God, I thought my heart was going to come through my mouth.
I'm thinking, that's it, we're caught. This guy's not stupid.
I could have just burst into tears. And when he flicked the lid open, that's game over, you know. That's it, life over, in prison, in the Caribbean, 20 years, good luck with that. But as it happened, when he squirted it, it was shampoo that came out. I couldn't take my eyes off what he was doing, like, every motion, everything he was doing. Looked at me again, took a tissue, wiped his hand.
I can go.
Said, everything's fine, take your bags, go through.
Have a good seat.
Thank you.
I could have kissed the man, you know.
As we're walking out the airport, both me and David were just laughing. We knew we'd got through.
It's like you've won the lottery. The relief is just overwhelming. No, it's like we've got away with this. God, it's sheer joy.
It was my birthday. So David says, go out and have a drink and have a good time for your birthday for tonight.
I can remember waking up, it was pretty early, that I mean, I'd got a stinking headache, you know, a hangover from hell. And I just nudged Jane. I said, how easy was that, Jane? I said, that guy's a customs officer. And he searched the bags, tried the shampoo, and if it's fooled him, it's going to fool everybody. I said, we'll make this. Michael said, there's a payment of 8,000 when you get back to England.
You'll get an envelope with £8,000 in it.
We've been through all that turmoil, all the terror, all the pain. If we don't deserve £8,000, who does, you know? Let's take these drugs, give them over in England, and let's, you know, just spend the money.
And I looked at David and he said, let's just go the rest of the way home, drop the bottles with them, pick up the cash and go.
Within 3 days, we've become international drug smugglers. Innocent party to drug smuggling, you know, in one fell swoop.
I love reading great books, but I don't have the time to sit down and read all of them. And if you're like me, you've got a list of books you haven't gotten to, so you need to give Audible a try. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content. No matter what you choose, you will love listening to Audible. A great book I recommend for an amazing audio experience is The Stranger Beside Me, Anne Rule's definitive story about her unlikely friendship with serial killer Ted Bundy. Right now, my listeners can start a 30-day trial and get their first Audible book free. Learn more at audible.com/lockedup. That's audible.com/lockedup.
The next morning, we got into the cab, went off to the airport.
From St. Lucia, we were heading to Waterloo. I don't think I was even nervous.
I was acting more normal. Tourists, island hopping.
I think the nerves are gone because we'd done the hard part. There are a few security guards about. Small little airport, we're going to get through this at Waterloo. Come round, and ours still hadn't come off the plane. Everybody else got their luggage. Ours still didn't come off the plane.
And I remember looking round and thinking, there's less and less people now in the airport.
We stood there 5 minutes, One bag came round, and it was Jane's.
There's no more on the plane. We have two of these.
I took it off, still waiting for my bag, no bag.
I looked at David and I just said, what's going on? I'm thinking then, they know.
I said, I've got to go on up to the information and report the bag missing.
I wanted for you to help us, please.
I said, look, we've just come from St. Lucia. We've had two bags. There's only one case.
When she got off the phone, she says there's been a mistake. It's been left on the plane going to the next destination.
My mistake, but don't worry.
And she said, don't worry, we will deliver it to your hotel.
Yeah.
So then I calmed down again. They've just left it on the plane by mistake.
Well, don't worry about it.
And now Jane's trying to calm me down.
Just come on, let's go.
Thanks.
So I'm trying to think positive, think, yeah, it's just a mistake. It's just been left on board. Walking to customs, there's nobody else around. Nobody, apart from the customs man on the desk, and all hell's let loose.
Hands in the air! Hands in the air!
They just appeared. Out every door.
It was just absolutely petrifying.
There you are on the floor. There's 20 coppers there with guns all armed, and they've got one pressed in the back of your head. I could hear her saying, I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't done anything wrong. And I'm trying to say, leave her alone, leave her alone. And he said, you're under arrest for transportation of cocaine. Right at that second, my life had gone, you know. They dragged her into a little room, guns at the back of her heads. They fetched the case and put it on the counter in front of us. He opened the suitcase up and immediately picked up a bottle.
Complete and utter fear. Absolutely terrified.
He just took a Stanley knife out, cut the bottle open, pulled out a bag. Panic.
He got a tester thing and he put it, dabbed it, and he said, this is liquid cocaine.
And she looked at me, you could see she was terrified. They fetched a press in to photograph it, and all the policemen behind all shaking hands and generally all smiling. I think they'd been tipped off we were coming. We were meant to get caught right from the start so they could haul 30, 40, 50 kilos through, you know. All we were decoys. Nightmare, absolute nightmare. They put us both in the back of the van and they drive to the big prison. God, it's awful.
When we got to the prison gates, there was guards there with the guns, and there's all like the barbed wire fencing.
I've just stepped out of the van. They handcuffed me to one officer and Jane to another one.
Didn't realise that we was going to be taken in through separate doors.
And all I can think about is, God, places like this, I mean, women getting raped, anything can happen to her.
Jane!
I was scared to death for the girl, you know? Scared to death for her.
He just looked at me, he turned and he just said, he shouted, I love you.
I love you! I love you!
I'm thinking, how can he? I'm thinking, how can he still love me after what I've just got him into?
I remember this walking through the gates and everything was quiet, silent, strange. Two officers came at the side of me and he opened the door.
Open the gates!
You've never heard anything like it in your life. And they were shouting abuse, banging the door, banging and banging and smashing. And they were throwing fires out the windows. Burning cloths, burning rubbish. The guard opened the door and he turned to me and he says, Englishman, he says, you'll be dead in 2 weeks.
Conditions for me weren't that bad. The rooms was clean. The guards were quite nice. By that point, I wasn't scared for myself anymore. I was worried about David. I was scared for him.
Every day out in prison, you live in fear that somebody's going to stab you, somebody's going to kill you. In there, you've got basically all the dregs of the earth, you know? You've got from petty criminals to armed robbers, murderers, child killers, some big guys, small guys, some nasty-looking animals. There wasn't a day I didn't see somebody getting stabbed or somebody getting slashed. I was terrified. I'd been in there 2 weeks. It was a Sunday afternoon. I can remember walking down some steel stairs that go to the bottom landing. It was blisteringly hot. I got a shirt on and I took the shirt off. But as I got the shirt over my head, a guard smashed my legs from underneath me. And I fell down the stairs. I hit my head. I hit my back. And I've just felt the bones in my back crunch. And I ended up on a heap on the bottom. I could feel blood gushing out of my head, you know. And the guard just walked away. Just left me on the concrete at the bottom of the stairs. Somebody fetched a white sheet from somewhere and threw it over me, you know. They thought I was dead. They took me to the infirmary and I was semi-conscious, you know, in and out of consciousness. 3 broken ribs, dislocated shoulder. I need about 14 stitches in my head. And the bottom 2 lumbar discs had just exploded into nothing. Now they're just gone, yeah, completely gone. They give me a pair of crutches and they lug me back to prison. I'm crippled. The back, it was horrendous pain, but they don't care. They just want you back in the system.
I'd heard a rumour that he'd been attacked. The prison guard told me that it was hurt badly, but they didn't give me any details. I was like, I was just scared to death the whole time. I'm terrified for him. Not for me, but for him.
I could see the women's cell block through the cell window. So I took the pillowcase off. I got a marker pen of some kind, and I just wrote on it. And I put it like a flag outside the window.
I just seemed, by the corner of my eye, I glimpsed and I seen this big pillowcase out of the window. And it just said, Jane, I love you on it. And I instantly knew it was David.
Hey!
And I stuck my arm out of the window and I'm waving, and then I started shouting to him.
Hey! The first time I saw James' arm come through, I mean, it made my heart, like, you know, it's race.
I love you!
And just to hear a voice to shout, you know, I love you. Just for that, you know, that few seconds meant the world.
When we actually got the release forms, I was like, oh, it was amazing. I knew that day was here that we was actually going home.
The guard come with a wheelchair and they wheeled me to the reception.
I just ran up to him, hugging him to bits. And I'm thinking, I'm not letting him go just in case they take me back.
It was just like, come on, let's just get out of here, you know. It's joy, overwhelming euphoria. We're out of that hole, you know, that cesspit of a prison. Against the odds, I survived. They tried to kill me, but I survived. I've paid a high price, you know. I've paid a very high price, health-wise. It's damaged beyond repair. Them 2 years has cost me my mobility, you know. I will end up in a wheelchair.
With a lot of people, it would have broke them. But I just love him to death.
I regret not having a little bit more common sense at the time and sticking to my instincts, you know, and I just got into a situation that's anybody can get into. Believe me, it can happen to anybody. It really can. We never once blamed each other. I love her to bits, you know. I love a bond with a girl. We'll always be soulmates, you know? Always.
The Thank you for listening to Locked Up Abroad. You don't want to miss a single episode. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, the Wondery app on Android, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You'll find a link to subscribe on the episode notes. Simply tap or swipe over the cover art. You'll also see some great offers from our sponsors. Please support our show by supporting our sponsors. If you have a moment, I'd love for you to complete a small survey at wondery.com/survey. Give us your ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to tell all your friends about our show. Locked Up Abroad was produced by Raw TV Limited for National Geographic channels. For our audio adaptation, the editor is Sergio Enriquez. Our producer is Donna Himes. Our executive producers are Jeffrey Glazer and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.